contending for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Life can often become weary with seemingly little progress, and we wonder if we're making any real difference as Christians living in the world. We're going to look at this struggle in the life of the Apostle Paul today, as I believe we're looking at a section in 1 Corinthians 18 where he was ready to give up. And it's at the moment of his great despair, discouragement, weariness that the Lord gives one of the most encouraging messages that we have to him in all of the scriptures, meant to be an encouragement to the believer to not lose heart, to realize the Lord is continuing to build his kingdom and nothing is stopping that, even through us when we feel like giving up. This is going to be an important message today from Acts chapter 18 to give us an entire perspective on the callings and vocations that the Lord has given to us. Thanks today for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Visit us on the web at agradio.org, agradio.org. The number is 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. We are on Facebook. We are also on Twitter at agradio1. We have a blog there on the web address page, agradio.org. So many resources there for you. We'd love for you to write to us. If you can support us, all of your support you can do right online at agradio.org. Here is now the program from Acts chapter 18, which I have titled, When It Seems Like More Than I Can Bear. I believe we've come to a point in Acts where the Apostle Paul is weary and tired and discouraged and feeling like things are not progressing as he thought they would, and at some ways ready to give up. And I'm hopefully going to show that to you today, hopefully make that clear to you to see how and why this particular passage is so important, because we come to one of the brightest moments in the book. I've never been for red letter editions of the Bible, but I like this one because right in there is one big section of red letter. And when I first read it, I read right over it. I passed right over it. In this section that I thought, how in the world am I going to preach this? Comes one of the greatest encouragements in the entire book. This is what it's like studying the Word of God and reading the Word of God. When we come to things like this, it's so easy to read right over what was just said to you. And this is one of those moments. It's a beautiful moment in the book of Acts. And these words have the intention of encouraging us in the same, that not just for life in general, but in our callings as Christians, whatever that calling might be, as those who are witnesses of Christ, in that particular command to be a witness to what the Lord has done for you, don't give up. I never like pastors being coaches, but I feel like one right now. Don't give up. That's the heart of this. It's the Lord telling us, I've not given up. I'm committed to this project. I'm going to complete what I said I'm going to do. No matter how things seem, no matter when everything is slow, no matter when everything seems to be unraveling at the seams, this is when we stop and listen to what the Lord is saying to us right here. And that's why Acts 18, I hope, will have a special place when you come to these moments in life. Last time, we spent time studying Paul in Athens. What a different place. What a unique place to go and to take the gospel. And I've tried to show you that everywhere Paul went, there was either revival or riots. The man thoroughly stirred up everything. Yeah, people came to faith, but the riots and the hardships were unbearable, it seemed, at times. More riots than revivals. You'll remember Thessalonica, Berea, Athens. He was provoked, particularly in Athens, by the idolatry. And he preached his heart out there. We looked at that message last time. And what did he face? Nothing that great.
In other words, by the end of that whole discourse, we love the preaching of Paul on Mars Hill, but by the end of it, it seemed uneventful to some degree, didn't it? You had the majority of them, it seemed, who were laughing and mocking him. You had the next group of people who were sitting there and saying, oh, maybe we'll hear you again on this. That's unbelief. And then it says some, and only two names are given that believe. Some of them did believe. But if you're looking at it with human eyes and evaluating things from our ministry standards, it was really not a great successful place, event that took place in Athens in the preaching of the gospel. That's how we would see it. As I'm following Paul's missionary journeys here, as we're following them and tracing them, I'm starting to think to myself, I don't know how well I would hold up. I mean, seriously, there's limits to what we can bear. He's passed them. I don't know anyone who could read these chapters and not see that. Let me just read this again so you know when he summarizes his struggles. 5 times from the Jews, I received 40 lashes minus 1. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was pelted with stones. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, and danger from bandits, and danger from my fellow Jews, and danger from Gentiles, and danger in the city, and danger in the country, and danger at sea, and danger from false believers. I've labored and toiled and have gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst and have gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Beside everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Who's weak? But I don't feel weak. You want to talk about weakness? Who's led into sin? Do I not inwardly burn? I mean, this is. One of you said to me, going through Acts has been good because I feel like we're studying real people. We tend to put these people way up here. These are real people with real struggles in the crucible, in the grind, and it's hard. The question for me is, how is this man holding up? I'm sure if I went around right now, around the room, it'd be interesting to survey the room today, the church today, and to see who here is feeling weariness. Who through all of this, constantly bearing down on us in life and society, everything that we see, the hardships, the seemingly little success of everything we're doing. I want to make it worse for you for a minute. I'm good at that, okay? With all that in mind, it gets a lot worse for Paul. We read that he went to Corinth. Stop. We have the advantage of reading 1 Corinthians. I preached that book, one of my favorite books to preach for the church today. You remember how many problems were in that church? It was the most compromised church in the New Testament. You had a Greek city filled with Roman culture. Everything that embodied Rome was in Corinth. It was a melting pot of all peoples and cultures mixed into the Roman way. Rome dominated their laws, their religion. It was called the most dazzling of all the Greek cities. 750,000 people in its heyday were in Corinth. That is remarkable when you think about it for considering what's in Escondido. What, 150? All of this wealth. And here's what's so important to study. Everyone in Corinth was, of course, pursuing the Roman dream. The city was set up for anyone with social status and advancement. Everyone was pushing for wealth and honor. Everyone was pushing for position. You had the best entertainments of the day. You had all the allures of the day. Here's the point. There was one major wicked problem in Corinth that dominated the city. And you know what it was? Sexual immorality. You know what became a common idiom? You know, we say all the time today, well, people, when they fornicate, we you have certain words for all of that. In Corinth, it was called Corinthianizing. There's nothing new under the sun. We have used it even for California to call it Californicate. All the cities knew about the girls in Corinth. In fact, when the guys came over to Corinth, if you had a Corinthian girl, that was a euphemism for saying she was a prostitute. This is Corinth. What a different city than Athens. What a combination of what I've described. There's no way you could be a Christian in this and not be affected by it. That would be like assuming that no man here is, are you totally unaffected by our culture's emphasis in this, men and women. Sure, we've got big problems with pornography. We've got big problems with all this stuff. You can't be unaffected by it. And Paul wasn't. He says that. You know what he said to the Corinthians when he wrote to them? I came to you in weakness with great fear and trembling. Why? I came here and I had one big emotion. I had one big problem. I was overwhelmed with fear coming to this place. You think about it. He walked into Athens and he sees all the idolatry. And there, you know, there's the gods of wood and stone, right? He was provoked by the idolatry, so he preached Jesus. Now he walks into Corinth, and he sees an entirely different kind of thing. I'm thinking he looks around at what would be a lot like walking in for us, Vegas. Yeah, this is Paul's looking around thinking, this is a seductive trap. How in the world am I going to minister in this and be effective at all? I know this is right because you just look and trace what the church in Corinth fell into, and you know this is a right assessment. Everything that was recorded of what happened in Corinth was this, in the extreme. One pastor said, at least in Athens, they were interested in debating ideas. And Paul could speak of Jesus and the resurrection and get a hearing. But not in Corinth. The youth in particular were interested in sex and sport. More than that, than talking about religion. That sound familiar? I'm sure he felt, I don't even know how headway is possible. Maybe you have experienced this and felt this. If you had been stoned and beaten and imprisoned as this man had been in cities of lesser consequence, can you imagine stepping into that, thinking to yourself, I know what's coming. I know what's coming. I'm sure he thought, it's absolutely inevitable. This one scares me to the extreme. How could I say anything against any of this and not have them come down on me? All of a sudden, you start to realize this is kind of our setting. This is kind of our work of ministry is sort of paralleled as we compare what happened in Corinth and what Paul had to face in Corinth. This is us. This is our day. These are the challenges. I mean, look at what you're trying to do. Raise children to love the Lord in this. Look at all the temptations. Look at all the sensuality. Look at all the lure of Babylon and all of its glory. You've got it here. And then try to say it's wrong in some kind of public forum. When it comes to this issue of sexual morality, you know what you're going to get. We're trying to do ministry in this. We're trying to minister the gospel of Jesus and offer him as an answer when this is what's being offered to them. Some of us are weary of giving in to this kind of stuff all the time. We're weary of the seeming little progress. We're weary of the way our children are responding. You can go right down the line here, can't you? You can go right down the line with a whole series of things where you would say, this feels like absolutely mission impossible. And the more battle wounds, the more scars that you have, the more the weariness envelops you, the more you are scared, the more you want to give up. Well, what happens from here? Let me make it a little worse first, and then it'll get better. In verse 4, we read that he did his typical thing of going first to the Jewish synagogue, and he was there trying to persuade the Jews and the Greeks. And verse 6 tells us that they opposed him and reviled him. They were calling him a blasphemer. This is an intense assault on him, reviling him. And it almost seems that Paul now breaks away from the whole thing. He has hit rock bottom when he blurts out and says, "Your blood be upon your own hand, head. I'm innocent. From now on, I go to the Gentiles. Done. I'm done with you. I've been a watchman on the wall. I've been Ezekiel sounding the alarm. No one's listening. You did not hear. I'm washing my hands." Using the language of Ezekiel here. "I am washing my hands. Your blood is on yourselves. I've been cleansed from this." Huge moment in ministry, actually. Here, shouldn't read over it too quickly. He finally broke from his way of doing things and no longer went to his own family. Hear me. He no longer went to his own family, his countrymen. He was done. Now, you need to know that when you read this, it comes across as sort of frustrated, angry, cold. But this is not what Paul said was going on internally in him. Paul said this in Romans 9, which he wrote from Corinth. "I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart." Why? "For I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my people, those of my own race, the people of Israel." This is like watching your whole family depart from the faith and leave the church and reject it all. How do you think that make you feel? Many of you couldn't even handle that. Those of your blood, those of your children. He is totally ripped up inside. Some of you have had loved ones who've done this. Some of you actually have had children who've done this. You see why I'm saying you have one discouraged apostle? He hasn't even made it into the streets of Corinth. And out of the gates, they've all rejected it. How in the world are you going to make headway in this? Right? And I think he throws up his arms and he begins to say, "Is this working? Is it?" I said to somebody the other day, look at the masses of people all around us. How many, Lord? How many are believing? How do you not look at this and think to yourself, this is a massive project failure? And our typical response is to say, "I just want to tuck away from all of it. I want to be done with it. Want to become a recluse. The more I can just avoid thinking about things, the better it all will be." This is somewhat, some have said, what happened to A.W. Pink at the end of his life. It's a recluse. We fight it all the time. I fight it all the time. It'd just be so much easier to disengage. So much easier. Disengage from all of this. Let somebody else do it, right? Let somebody else. See, I'm not just describing what happens in Christian ministry to pastors. I'm describing what happens to you every day in daily life. The fruit is so little, the problems so many, and we're just often perplexed about it all. At the apex of this discouragement comes the red letters, if you will. I love this. This is where you read and you stop and you say, wow, what a moment in the book of Acts. The Lord comes in the night, and after all this discouragement, the Lord himself encourages him. And I want you to know that this is a long-standing pattern of the Lord that goes all the way back to Abraham. In fact, if you want to turn there, you can. But in Genesis 15, before we look at this, listen to this. In Genesis 15, when Abraham had just been out through the battle at war, trying to recover Lot, he is absolutely exhausted. He is absolutely burned out. He is discouraged. He is weary. And here comes the Lord. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Listen to this. And then you can compare it to what we have here. Fear not, Abram. I am your shield and your exceedingly, and your reward shall be very great. Abram, I'm giving you meat. Don't fear. Don't fear. Notice particularly here, I wish I had all the time here today to go through the scriptures and show you how often in the moments of great discouragement and great fear, the Lord would come to his sheep and speak like this and talk to them this way. Notice how tender he is. Listen to what he's saying to you. This is all the kind of treatment that comes out of the covenant of grace. I am your God, you are my people. Okay? Listen to it. It's so beautiful. Do not be afraid, but go on speaking and don't be silent, for I'm with you. And no one will attack you to harm you, for I have many in this city who are my people. It's the truth that's always displayed in the scriptures. The Lord is my helper, so I will have no fear what can mere people do to me. The Lord is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. There is absolutely nothing in life that he has ever left us alone to face. You understand that? Nothing. And as Jesus himself is speaking to his servant here, maybe I've missed it and I'm speaking here off the cuff. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we find Jesus speaking to Paul like this since the time of his conversion. When he brought him out and struck him down on the road, and now here he is, when he said, I'm going to show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake. But here's the Lord lifting up his servant and encouraging his servant and strengthening him through his word. It's just beautiful. I want you to go on speaking and to not be silent, Paul. Don't do it. Open your mouth. You keep doing what I set you apart to do. You give them hope. You keep preaching Jesus. You keep doing what I told you to do. You give them the answer in the midst of this. I don't want you looking around at everything and thinking to yourself, look at the discouragements, look at the effects, look at the fruits, look at all this failure and judge what you are called to do based on that. I don't want you doing that. I want you faithful right here. What I've called you to do is open your mouth and speak. Isn't that just the verse every day for getting up? I've called you. You're my child. You're my son. You're my daughter. Get up. This is what I'm calling you to do. And then he gives this remarkable statement that makes us a little uncomfortable. For no one will attack you to harm you. In this case, that would be true. But that is eternally true. There's nothing anyone can do to eternally harm you. You understand that? Nothing. Here's what's so wonderful about the encouragement. I want you to speak. Hear me speak. Why? For I have many people in this city. Who wants to tell me God's not sovereign? Who wants to tell me there's not a doctrine of election? Who wants to tell me the Lord's not in control of the mission? Here you go. And yet it's the most wonderful news ever. Did you hear it? I've got a whole bunch of people in this city and they don't know they're my people right now, Paul. They don't even know it. So guess what? Guess why you're here? I need you to speak because this is how they're going to come in through the means of you speaking.
Thank you for listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.